they see me mowing my front lawn. I know they're all thinking I'm so wide and nerdy.
Ain't just too wide and nerdy.
Ain't just too wide and nerdy.
Can't you see I'm wide and nerdy?
Hello, everybody. This is episode 4 of the Henchman's Lounge podcast, and I am Captain Frugal.
And I'm Henchman 1.
So we've got a lot of topics to discuss today, so let's start with, at the very top, some comic reviews. First, we read Hail Hydra issue number 1, written by Rick Remender, and I don't know, how do you pronounce that guy's, the artist's name?
We'll say Bashi.
Bashi, that sounds about right.
Chuck Reed.
I did do a review of this, and I did put it up on the website, so there's a video on that for a review. But what did you think about this issue?
The Hail Hydra?
Yes.
That's the one I didn't read. I read the other one, the Squadron Sinister or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Like, so I haven't read the Hail Hydra, so...
All right, well, I won't spoil
it. It's got a nice cover.
Well, I won't spoil it for you. I'll wait to somebody that can check out the video and maybe get your thoughts on it next time. So how about then the Squadron Sinister? Then we'll jump to that one. This was written by Mark Guggenheim, and the penciler was Carlos Pacheco.
Pacheco, I think that's how he... Yes, that's how you say his name.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll go over this one. The book starts with the character Night, Hawk, and Wizard on patrol, and they're stopping thieves. And, of course, because these guys are really mean, they kill them. Night, Hawk tells Wizard that he plans on unseating Hyperion. The book then moves to Bar Sinister, which is Baron Sinister, also known as Mr. Sinister, with Hyperion and Sinister sitting there talking about the Thor situation, because the Thor that was murdered in the last issue. And this was done in – the murder was happening in Hyperion's territory, and they were discussing what to do about it because evidently if that happens, Doom is probably going to kill you. So Hyperion then leaves from there to go to the Wastelands, Wasteland Sinister, which is supposedly neutral ground with several members of the Squadron to talk with the Frightful Four about a territory dispute. They have a nice little discussion, and it's clear that they do not trust each other at all, and Hyperion leaves by threatening them. As he leaves. Next, we see Hyperion and Wonder Woman, Warrior Woman. In bed with doing a discussion about the dead Thor issue as well. And then we transition yet again to Hazard and Warrior Woman taking it to the street, in secrecy, you know, with Batman or Nighthawk. Listening overhead, and they discuss that Hyperion does not know that she is working for the Newtopians, and that they plan to take the Squadron Sinister down from the inside. We then, once again, I want tons of transitions in this book.
Yeah.
I tell you. We move to Newtopia Providence with Spitfire, Starbrand, Mark Hazard, and Jack, was it Mega Knight or something like that from Kickers Incorporated, are talking about making a move on the Squadron Sinister, but they know they're outpowered, but they have an idea to give 1% of Starbrand's power to many others to create an army. So it's starting to be a little bit interesting there.
Right.
And then we once again shift to Europix Providence in the middle of a fight. And this is about time this book, in my opinion, had some action. We find Captain Savage and his Leatherneck Raiders, Combat Kelly and the Deadly Dozen, and Sergeant Fury with his Howling Commandos working together in a fight with the Frightful Four to maintain their territory. After one short page of fighting, we are then moved again, this time to the Squadron Citadel, with Hyperion, Warrior Woman, and Nighthawk for, yes, more talking. Wizard rushes in to tell them about the fight. And then they are all, we're taken back to the fight where the Squadron joins in. Warrior Woman seems to make short work of Titania. What is it? Titania? Is that what her name is? I can't remember.
Sure.
She breaks her neck. The Wizard scatters Sandman's particles around for miles, which makes us believe that's either going to take him out for some time or maybe dead. Dr. Spectrum seems to have also greatly wounded the Wizard with a gaping chest wound, and Paste Pot Pete, yes, the wonderful Paste Pot Pete, takes off running for his life. Big shocker. Hyperion raises the Wizard and tells him he did not want to annex this land, Woodland, I believe it's called, Whitland, I think. Yeah, something like that. And they could have stayed on their side peacefully. But, of course, shortly after we find out that Paste Pot Pete gets caught by Nighthawk. We then move to Captain Simon Savage thanking Hyperion for their help taking care of the Frightful Four that they made incredibly fast work of, which sort of saddened me.
Yeah, they took the Frightful Four out quick.
Yeah. He is now in charge with Fury dead. And Hyperion then says he will annex their territory, provided he won't. They'll annex their territory, I'm sorry, saying that they'll pay 60% of their GDP and 30% of their food stores. And of course, with that unacceptable number, I mean, how are they going to survive with that? Simon does not agree to the terms, so once again, Hyperion kills this guy. He then tells the person with the bow, whatever the heck his name was, that he's in charge. He'll go if he goes by the terms, if he wants to live. And of course, being after just seeing somebody get brutally killed in front of him, he agrees. He then tells Dr. Spectrum to kill the wizard as he heads off to Metropolis. I mean, Utopolis. I wonder, that's so original. So we're taking Utopolis. Seems that the base has been wrecked, and there is once again more discussion by the Squadron Sinister. It seems the fight was nothing but a distraction, and it looks like it was probably the Sandman. He wasn't killed after all, and he used that time to steal that Argonite weapon, which is, Hyperion's kryptonite, if you will. And then Nighthawk decides to interrogate Paste Pot Pete about this situation. Paste Pot Pete says he doesn't know anything about the weapon and where it is, but Nighthawk knows and agrees with him and believes him, but he's going to torture him anyway. He tells him that so that he can tell the squadron who took the weapon and look convincing, and that he will enjoy torturing him, which was quite brutal. On the last page, we finally join Warrior Woman in Hyperion's bedroom looking for him, but instead she runs into Nighthawk, and Nighthawk tells her he knows she's a traitor, but he does have plans for her. And then that is the end of the book. So I'm going to hit my pros and cons. Well, first of all, we start with pros. My pro is I thought the artwork was good. The pace of the book was good. And the book makes me want to know Nighthawk's plans, even though I don't like the character.
Right.
How about you? Any pros from you?
I like the scheming amongst the villains. I mean, it's kind of like if you had an evil Justice League and they're all conspiring against each other. It's just, you're almost rooting for the lesser of whoever the most evil character is. And I think in this case, it's Bat-Hawk or Night-Bat? Or
Nighthawk.
Not Batman.
Yeah, not Batman.
Not Wonder Woman. They're all scheming against Hyperion, who's not Superman. It makes me wonder how it's going to end. It's like Hyperion's just like so super powerful and whatnot. So you know, at some point there'll probably be a fight between not Batman and not Superman, Nighthawk and Hyperion.
Any more pros?
I like the artwork. I think it was a good pace. It did make me want to find out what happens next. So I have to say that's a good element of storytelling. If you want to know what happens next, if you're like meh. It wasn't that good. So it's not meh. It was good.
Alright. Next for the cons, I thought that the fights were very well rushed and it didn't have much depth except to show that Hyperion might as well be freaking invincible. I mean, it was just like, boom, they're done. The book seemed like nearly every page was time for a new transition to a new place for a new conversation. So, hey, let's go here and talk. Okay, yeah. Let's go here. And the characters still seem like evil knockoffs of the Justice League, which in fairness, that's what they were intended to be, especially Hyperion and Nighthawk, leaving me to wonder if this story would have been better possibly with a different cast.
Maybe. What I was thinking is when they're running around being brutal to everybody, there doesn't seem to be enough character setup. They're just going to run around being brutal. Like you've got the Nick Fury, the Howling Commandos or not the Howling Commandos?
Yeah.
Sergeant Fury. And, here you got these good guys trying to fight. Who knows where they are? It's not. I think the thing is you don't really have a sense of place and time where everything is in this book. So they're just kind of roaming around beating people up. So it just seems pretty fleeting, like.
Right. And see, that's my big problem. Everyone's so supposedly so scared of Doom. But you look, anytime anything comes against this team, they easily take them out. So they almost seem like they're so powerful. Why be afraid of Doom?
Yeah. But again, I haven't read any of the Secret Wars books to know maybe Doom's like godlike and just thinks something into existence or non-existence and that happens.
Oh, he's very powerful. For example, he just made the Human Torch into the sun.
Right.
Well,
Hyperion is ridiculously powerful in the book. You know, Doom is just like, he just blinks and you're gone.
Yeah.
I can see everybody being kind of afraid of that, but.
Alright. And for grades, this book I thought was decent, but once again I was stuck with a group of characters that I don't particularly like and I don't really care for. With that said though, it is turning out much better than I expected it, but I can't see this book going any farther than a one story arc. as a mini-series, but yet they're publishing it as an ongoing. I just don't see it going past that story arc.
Yeah, I don't know with all these spin-off books, whatever, like Weird World, and again, it smells of the New 52, where they had all those books and all the series that came out all at once, and then after a while, they kept getting canceled and canceled and canceled. I think this is just a limited series. I can't see it being, this will be an ongoing monthly book.
Yeah. Okay, for grades overall, I gave it a C. I didn't think it was anything super spectacular. If it would have had more in-depth fight scenes and a little less let's go somewhere and talk, I think it would have easily gotten a B. But all that, every page it seemed like it turned is go talk somewhere else, and the fight scenes were just so quickly over with, I couldn't quite get it there for a B.
Yeah, I guess for me, I saw the talking as more like Nighthawk manipulating everybody, finding out who's doing what. Again, it's like if Batman was evil, this is kind of how he would be. And so, again, it was intriguing. It was kind of neat to say, okay, how is he going to try to get one up on Hyperion? How's that going to work? It, you know, and the book made me want to read what happens next. So I'd give it a B.
Okay.
If it was just sort of, I don't really care one way or the other, and it was good, but then I'd probably say a C. It was like, this book sucked, which didn't.
Well, and to be honest, I really struggled. I teetered between C and C plus hard on this one, because that's the one thing it does go for me. I sort of want to see how the screw job comes and who comes out on top.
Yeah. And so it's kind of an anti-hero, anti-villain. They're villains. There's no way, I guess, you're just having villains. I think that's, we see that a lot in storytelling a lot. You know, you see like House of Cards, Breaking Bad, and it's just everybody's becoming a villain, and it seems like, yay, it's time to root for the villains. And I'm like, but that's not why we read comics or those sorts of things.
You know, that's an interesting dynamic, because I think a lot of comic book readers, we have a thing with good and evil, and maybe that changes our perspective. Someone has to either be good or has to be evil, and, you know, it makes it hard to find that in between.
Yeah, and there's room for middle ground type characters. You can have a character like Wolverine who's, you know, cranky and grumpy and mean and whatnot, and but at his heart, he's a good guy. Even though he might cut you up a little bit, but he's not going to kill you.
Well, he's dead for now. So.
Well, for now.
Yeah, but
I guess the same thing for Batman now. I mean, now he's just kind of like a hyper-pro wrestler who goes around brutalizing people. But he's still a good guy. He won't kill anybody or shoot anybody.
Interesting point. Now, last podcast, number 3, you brought in Weird World, number 1. I reviewed it, and I hadn't read it yet. But after reading it myself, I decided, you know, with my thoughts on it, I liked the story and things. I gave it a B, first one, which made me definitely want to read issue 2, which you brought today.
Yes, we've got issue number 2, and it's Archon is trapped in some dungeon, and he talks to some gem-glowing guy.
Oh.
And then they escape. They snap some necks of some underwater ape men, and they find a bag of glowing stuff. And
I can highly contain myself on this, just so you know.
And then you got Morgan Le Fay. She's got this dragon who was Archon's dragon in the first one, and he, like, the dragon growls at her, spits on her, and she's just doesn't blink an eye. I think for me that was one of the big drawbacks to this book is, I hate that in movies or TV shows or anything where somebody's such a badass that they don't blink or flinch. Like, come on, this is a giant dragon. It could snap your head off. At least blink, you know?
Well, something elevated it for me, and I don't think every reader will pick up on it, and I could be wrong.
Right.
But when I read it, at one point I about lost because that – crystal guy that broke through the walls is Warbo.
Yes.
And I was like, oh, no freaking way. I haven't seen him from like the early 70s, I think it was.
80s.
Was it 80s?
83, 84.
Okay. Which they launched for a toy line, which even goes farther because they escaped together. And he agrees for the hero, our villain hero in this book, Archon or whatever, to work with him to give him a map if he helps him free the prince. So they get in there. And he gets a bag, and Archon's saying, well, you just broke in this for something valuable, you know, and then they're surrounding it. But in that bag was like these crystals, and I just about got Hero Wood on that because I could almost guarantee that's got to be Crystar. I was like, oh, hell no, because now they're all surrounded. You're going to think, oh, they're doomed. You know, these two guys versus all these, I bet you they're going to start getting their butt kicked or something, and then Crystar is going to pop out. And I was just like, freaking sweet, because we haven't seen these characters for a lot of years, ever since they decided to launch this toy run.
Right.
And that didn't go real big, so now it's gone. And that's all it was created for, was for toys.
Yes.
But I was like, sweet, because I remember my little brother having the hero and messing around, which shows age there, but having the character, and I'd mess around with him on that. And I had one whole whopping Crystar comic book.
Right. Now, and I didn't know any of that going and reading the book. To me, it was just, because the book doesn't say, oh, this is Warbo or this is Crystar. It just says, here's some glowing guy with an eye patch. We're running around doing stuff. And that made it more interesting, because then I went online and looked up Crystar and all the old comics from the 80s. And there's some really cool artwork. Was it Michael Golden does a lot of cover work and some of the interior work? And
yeah, and when I looked at it too, that dragon, I didn't pick up on that. I think that's from the Crystar series as well.
Yeah. But I guess so. But there's other characters like Moltar, who's like this lava guy, and OGO, who's like some old crystal wizard guy. And, but it looked like it would be a fun comic to read, the old one. So we'll see. But overall, I thought the story was okay, because I didn't really know who was who, and I just was like confused and not sure about anything. And the artwork really leaves, I think, a lot to be desired. And we had a conversation about, maybe the artists and writers aren't really taking all that much time and effort into it because they know this is going to be a limited series.
Well, I think they also have some really deadlines to hit with the Secret Wars. You look, Marvel's really struggling to keep up. They've already postponed and a few things, too.
I think they're already behind with their Secret Wars, but Weird Words written by Jason Aaron and illustrated by Mike Del Mundo. And it just seems like it's one event and then another event and another event. There's no character. So if you just want something that's all action all the time with nothing, this would be fine to look at. However, if you want good artwork to go with that, well, I can't promise you'll like this artwork. It's like, way back in the 80s, there was an artist named Bill Sienkiewicz, and a lot of people didn't take to his artwork. And I liked his artwork, but his artwork had a definition. You knew what you were looking at, even though it was like weird and sketchy. This guy just looks like he's taking Photoshop and just sketching things. Like, if he took his time, I'm sure he could draw something better than he does. But it may be a deadline issue. I don't know. So I'm being kind of merciful on him. So I would give it a C. I mean, I want to know what happens next because I'm already two issues into the series. But now I want to see if it is Crystar and Warbo, and I'll probably get more into the old 80s comic.
Well, when I read it, getting into it, I didn't expect much, I'll be honest. I was thinking probably a C book.
Yeah.
And the first issue actually was pretty intriguing, so I gave it a B. I was quite surprised. And on this one, I started reading it, and I was like, holy crap, those characters I haven't seen in a year. And I remembered this, comic book nerd would. But I also had some of the same cons. I thought the art could be better, but I did understand, it's Weird World, and so the artwork does sort of fit a Weird World, which was nice, but a more definition would have been better. To be honest, I was really shocked. I gave this book a B+. But really a lot of it's because of Crystar. I just want to see him pop out and beat ass.
That would be funny. So. And that just shows just different how different people can look at something differently. Crystar, Warbo, and I was like, what?
Yeah. Now, if he doesn't appear next issue, frickin', I'm gonna be pissed.
I bet it will be him. It'll probably be Crystar.
But it's not.
Who knows what weird copyright issues are there? Because way back in, the 80s, they had ROM the Space Knight.
Yeah.
And there's a thing with Link Kara that was on the top of the fourth wall where he has a whole big video thing that he does about ROM the Space Knight. It looks like it'd be a cool series to read, but I don't know if Marvel will ever be able to republish it because of all the...
I believe the rights are with IDW now.
Okay, so IDW may in the future publish that. Who knows? Same thing with this Crystar comics. Who knows who has what rights to what? It looked like one of the covers, the art was done by Michael Golden, and later a group called Danzig in the 80s took that skull graphic and put it on one of their albums. So I don't know if they bought it or whatever they did.
Oh, did you ever hear that song, Mother?
Tell your children not to walk my way. Tell your children not to hear my words. What they mean, what they say, Mother.
That's from Danzig.
Oh, I may have, actually.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I didn't know that came from that graphic.
Yeah, that's where it came from, was from that old Crystar comic book.
I'll be dang. I'll have to. I got one of their albums.
Because it has that whole heavy metal theme, which, heavy metal bands in the late 70s, early 80s were totally into, like, Lord of the Rings and wizards and devils and all kinds of fantasy-oriented stuff. I wasn't really into heavy metal, but I just remember the album covers.
I had it. I have a lot of metal out. So. Yes. Do you have any other books you wanted to talk about today? Or?
Well, that would be it for the books, but I'm thinking, you know, in the future, just as kind of a preview thing, I picked up an old copy. When I was a kid, I had a comic. Some Blake or something, and I had a copy of a book called Weird War Tales, and it was issue number 92. I found a copy of it in a comic store, and it's in way better shape than the one I had. It just reminded me that comics can be fun. They don't always have to be ongoing storylines and stuff, but you can just create a book that's, you know, here's a bunch of weird stories. Like, they're kind of like ghost stories set around a war premise. And I went to eBay. Like, there's something called Mystery in Space, number 111. And I was just going to try to find the one book and, you know, maybe pay $8 to $10 for it. But I found, like, several of them, like 111 through 117 for, like, $8.
Sweet.
And I was like, cool. So I had to get that. So that'll be coming soon. So I think at some point we'll have to do an archived, or what is it, stash?
I like the term flashbacks from the stash, personally, right. But who knows?
Flashbacks from the stash.
I've got many of those.
So. Something like that would be great. So, and then maybe, you know, there'll be that. So, and maybe some best of fights and things like that, because I have an X-Men that has Jean Grey fighting Sabretooth, so.
I think, a couple copies of that one.
Yes. So, coming attractions.
I think I had some leftovers in my stash from I did at a comic resale business, so.
Yeah.
Okay, well, now we got comics out of the way. If you haven't heard, there's a Guardians of the Galaxy cartoon coming out. You can look it up. There is a little, you know, trailer for it. I'm digging it. I'm sort of excited, which is weird because, to be honest, I have not seen, I'm probably one of the few people, I have not seen Guardians of the Galaxy yet. I have it on Blu-ray.
Yeah,
I just haven't gotten to it.
You should see it.
It's on the list, but I seen that cartoon. It's like, I gotta see this. You know, it looked good to me. Just a throwback to the 80s music and stuff too, which, you know, the Walkman, which I have heard a little bit about the movie, so I definitely look forward to that.
Yeah, it's funny. It feels like an 80s movie. It feels like an older movie when you watch it. It doesn't feel like something today where all special effects all the time. It was actually a story. It's got a beginning, middle, end. You got characters you actually care about. You know, the way they used to make movies.
Yeah. Now for our next segment.
Old School Games!
Right. Today I thought we'd hit the Atari system, the Atari 2600. Did you have any Atari 2600 days?
Who didn't have an Atari 2600 back in the day? I mean,
I still have one.
It'd almost be funny to say, I like the tank battle that came with, what was it called? That came with the 2600?
Combat, I think.
I think that was Combat.
I loved
it
too.
But no, that wouldn't be my favorite. Pitfall, of course, I think is just about everybody's favorite.
Jugglehaw I loved too.
And it was the accomplishment, you know, like when you can run all the way through from the beginning to the end in Pitfall, that was like the thing. Like, oh man, I made it through the whole way, because it was really tough to make it through the whole thing.
Yeah, freaking alligators.
Yeah, you had to jump on their heads. Eventually, I think Mattel started making some sports games for the Atari, because they created Intellivision. And I had like a football game for it, and I had a baseball game for it, and those were kind of fun.
I had baseball, I had basketball, which is two people, by the way.
And the Atari basketball and football were crazy, because of the football, it was like everybody's like almost glowing and transparent, because the graphics just couldn't handle all these things moving, so everything just became semi-transparent. And like throw, it was like, boom, it was crazy. Adventure was another fun game for the 2600.
Yeah.
That's kind of a weird one. There's a movie on Netflix that's about the guy who created that, created the E.T. video game, and how it's really amazing how the E.T. video game for the 2600 like just about buried the video game market for a couple of years.
They accepted a job with 2 weeks to make that game.
Right.
No wonder. I mean, who could do a game in 2 weeks?
The guy took it on.
Yeah. Probably wished he didn't.
Yeah.
He did have a popular run with like Yara's Revenge and things. Some of mine, looking back, I still have the Atari 2600. I have a 7800. I have the Atari Flashback too. I love Jungle Hunt.
Right.
Swinging on, very similar Pitfall, almost like let's take it the next step. Swinging on vines, dodging rocks, jumping over, these guys with spears to save Lady. And another one, River Raid.
I remember Jungle Hunt in the arcade, because it was based on an arcade game. Mm-hmm. And I still have the music in my head that will never come out. But River Raid was fun. Yeah, what about that?
Yeah, you fly around, you get an overhead view, you're flying around, you have to keep getting fuel, otherwise you'll run out of fuel and not hit stuff and shoot stuff on the way. That was pretty much it.
Yeah, they'd probably make a great iPhone app now, like an iPhone game.
All right. Well, another one is, once again, I'm behind on the movie, so I don't have much input on this one, but we had the recent release of the Ant-Man movie.
Right. I recently saw it, and I was kind of on the fence about seeing it. I heard a rumor that MODOK might be in the film. And so a friend of mine is like, hey, you want to go see it? I'm like, what the heck? So I went and saw it with my friend. And when we first got in the theater, we were the only two people in the theater. I thought, okay, we're going to be able to sit here and do the MST3K treatment if this movie's awful. but it wasn't awful, and it was actually good. It focuses on the main character is Scott Lang, who's the second Ant-Man?
I believe so, but Pym was the first.
Okay, so Henry Pym is the first original Ant-Man. I have a review online at thehenchmanslounge.com, where I do the full review, but overall, it's about Scott Lang and how he learns to become Ant-Man. And Henry Pym is older, it's played by Michael Douglas, and apparently he was the younger Ant-Man back in the 60s, so maybe if they do an Agent Carter, maybe they could do something set in the 50s or 60s, and then we'll see Ant-Man in his prime, or at least Henry Pym. There's like little nods and stuff like that, I think, to the comic in the movie. But overall, I think the story was good. It's a fun movie to watch. It doesn't take itself too seriously. You know, you even have some ethnicity in there. There's ethnic characters in there without being stereotyped ethnic, but just sort of fun. It's not just a bunch of white guys sitting around being boring and white. I mean, there's some fun stuff that goes on.
We're gonna sit around and be boring and white today.
Like in Avengers, they just, like that scene in, you didn't see the Age of Ultron yet, but in the middle, for me, the most boring part of that film was when they go to Hawkeye's farm, and,
Hawkeye has a farm?
Yes. Oh. I didn't know that either. And that's what I thought when I got to, oh, they just landed the Quinjet at a farm. Okay? But anyway, and the movies for me came to a complete stop. And I don't want to go further into it until you've seen the movie, and we can do like a conversation about it. But overall, the movie's good. You've got Hope Van Dyne, who's the daughter of Henry Pym and Janet Van Dyne. And so you find some things about what happens to the original Wasp. That plays into the story. You find out why Hope Van Dyne is not the Ant-Girl or Ant- or Wasp in this movie, but there's a little hint or nod at the end of the film that the next time you see her, she will be the Wasp. It's sort of a preview for that. But anyway, there's like two stingers at the end of the film. There's one that,
Wasp stingers.
there you go. One does show you about what will become of the Wasp, but I don't want to give anything away. And then there's another one that is sort of a wink and a nod to the upcoming Captain America Civil War movie. So, according to the tone of the movie, I said is light and fun, but that last stinger really is sort of like a dark, serious tone. Mm. So it really is different from the tone. But Owen Falcon's in the movie.
Oh, sweet.
And he's got like way more time in the movie than he did in Age of Ultron.
Awesome. As a big Falcon fan, that means a lot to me. Yes. Now I'm a more of a purist, you know,
right.
And so I will say that's a rub to me. I think if you're gonna do a freaking Ant-Man movie, do it with Hank Pym. But, you know, that's the purist, and I can understand and get past that. It's just like when I seen the Avengers, it's like, why did that not have Ant-Man and the Wasp? But, you know, that's me. But for a new viewer that maybe is not big into continuity,
right?
If you walked in to watch that movie and didn't really know anything about the Avengers as a hero, would you understand everything that's going on?
If you just knew nothing about it, I'd probably be better walking into it knowing nothing about it than knowing stuff about the comics.
Oh.
I will say, speaking of Agent Carter, she's got a tiny cameo in the movie also.
Sweet.
But I didn't recognize her at first. And if you're a fan of Mad Men, the guy who plays Roger Stern is also in the movie as well. And there's a bunch of other type of cameos in there. Even Stan Lee, of course, has a cameo in this film.
Gotta have Stan.
Yes. He better enjoy it while it lasts. I'm glad he's great. He's good health for a man who's, what, 93 years old.
Oh, I'm gonna cry when he's gone.
Yes, there'll be statues built for
him. He deserves it.
Yep. And, but I think the overall big con for me about this movie is there was no MODOK. So I don't want to spoil that for anybody, but hopefully, I can't wait for when MODOK does show up, because my friend and I were like, oh my god, if MODOK shows up, we're just gonna flip out. Because that'd be the coolest thing ever. And I mean, he's like one of the craziest Kirby villains or monsters ever created.
Yeah.
I know they'll screw it up in the movies.
Well, they hinted at him in Captain America a little bit.
They hinted at him?
Wasn't he the computer correct?
No, that was,
oh no, it was Zola.
Arnim Zola?
Yeah, that's right. My mistake.
Who, if you see the comics, he's basically this like robot with like a television screen and the faces on the screen and really tripped out Kirby artwork. And so I really liked how they did it, that really 80s effect. 80s computer effect.
Alright, and, we have one more topic on our list today, and that was some about the Jessica Jones Netflix series being the next one to come out.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, I think it's interesting because a lot of people probably don't know much about Jessica Jones. And to be honest, I am a big Luke Cage fan, Iron Fist, and I've read pretty much all the stuff around her, but I never really knew a whole lot about her.
Right.
Just pulling up, give Wikipedia a little credit, which is not always the most accurate. Jessica Campbell Jones Cage, because she got married to Luke Cage, appeared in comic books published by, of course, Marvel, created by Brian Michael Bendis and artist Michael Gaidos, however, it is G-A-Y-D-O-S.
We'll say Gaidos.
Okay. Jones first appeared in Alias No. 1 of 2001 as a former superheroine who became the owner and sole employee of Alias Private Investigations. She has since starred in two ongoing series, Alias and The Pulse, and became a member of the New Avengers, and this is where I knew of her. Alongside her husband Luke Cage, which she really didn't do jack in the book except take care of their kid.
Right.
So at various times in her history, she's used aliases as Jewel, Nitrous, and Power Woman. She'll be played by Kristen Ritter, which is I think she's talented. Should be interesting to see what happens.
Maybe
in
she's
there.
Related to John Ritter.
I don't know. That's a good question. There's another Ritter guy that. Actor too, and I think she's related to that one, Jason Ritter, which maybe that's his kid. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into that.
There'll be a Three's Company moment in the show or something.
Yeah, out of all the ones they've announced, this is the one I'm least wanting to watch.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say I won't like it or won't be interested in it.
Right.
I mean,
Agent Carter. I didn't know what to expect out of that. I really liked it.
I did too.
I think with this. It'll be one of those, because you don't know what to expect, it'll be a lot of fun, because there's no expectations. Like, you're not, you know, when you walk into something, you expect a certain thing. Like, when I saw Amazing Spider-Man 2, it was like, actually, I went into that with no expectations. I wanted to actually,
for the best.
Even the first Amazing Spider-Man, I went, oh, okay, we'll see. And so it was better than I thought. Any movie where I go with almost no expectations is usually better than I thought. Like, everybody hated the second Jurassic Park movie. I went in there only to watch the dinosaurs. I could have cared less about the story.
I'm here for the dinosaurs.
And I'm one of the few people who actually liked the movie.
Wait for Stegron to pop up.
Right. Stegron could have popped up. And should have.
Yeah, it would have made the movie.
that would teach you Ian Malcolm.
I will say, if they have her meet Luke Cage in that series, I better be wearing my brown pants.
Well, I think they will, because you said he marries or she marries Luke Cage.
Yes.
And there's a Luke Cage series planned at some point. So my guess is probably quarter four, about 2016, maybe not upcoming Christmas, but the next Christmas.
Sweet Christmas.
Right.
Because there'll be the Daredevil season 2 will come out, and everybody will be like, yay! And so it's supposed to have Punisher and Elektra.
Yeah, that's going to be awesome. Though I did read something recently, I don't know how true it is, I'll have to double check for references too. It says they're really struggling with the Iron Fist. Part of the series, partly due to his mystical component of his origin. I think that would be a big challenge, but I hope they get it right. I would be so happy.
It wouldn't be really that hard. You could just have people in a bunch of robes sitting around, and every now and then you just go and have a special effect where he does, Iron Fist and punches into something. It'd have less of a budget than I would think, like The Flash or Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or something like that. You really could keep it lower budget. I mean, Daredevil is pretty low budget, as it is, and it's fun to watch.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah, I definitely think that popularity will help, give that. But hopefully this next one will keep the momentum going and not make people go, I don't know. I'm hoping it keeps pushing through. Now, I will say I've been reading another thing, too. There's been a lot of people pushing, well, why don't they do a Spider-Man Netflix series? Because we won't get a movie until 2017.
Yep.
I'm not a big fan of that, though. I think with the lower budget, it's going to be really hard to pull off. If I was to do that, I would spotlight other characters, and use other characters in that platform instead.
In the Spider-Man or like in the street level heroes?
In the Netflix series itself, because making a Netflix Spider-Man I think would be incredibly hard to do, with a television budget.
Yeah, unless you do it animated.
Yeah.
That's why you see a lot of animated Spider-Man. But.
I mean, I could definitely see a Punisher spin-off Netflix series. Yeah. I think that would be awesome.
Yeah, there could be a Punisher spin-off. I'm just trying to think of what other street-level villains or heroes there are. I mean, you could have other Spider-Man, like Hammerhead, the guy with the iron head.
Yeah, well, he had his head skull in place with
You could have him in the movie or TV show. You could have, well, you got the Kingpin.
Tombstone.
The Rose is in there. Tombstone, that's the guy I think I was thinking of.
Yeah.
But yeah, you could do, I mean, there's a lot you could do with it. You could have the occasional cameo of somebody like Spider-Man.
You know, it just popped in my head, and I know I'm on a big kick on this right now, but the Superior Foes of Spider-Man.
Right.
A show like that would just be,
that would be awesome.
I don't think it'd take a lot of money, because Beetle Suit, big deal. Speed Demon, you could do the fast thing pretty cheap. Boomerang, not expensive.
Right.
You know, Shocker, not expensive.
Right.
That could be freaking awesome.
It's like, we both saw the preview for the upcoming Deadpool movie, and I think a Sinister Foes of Spider-Man would be almost on par with that, or just be a comedy of errors of seeing these villains. And it could also be like what's Sinister Squadron Sinister, where they're plotting against each other. It's almost like they're stooges.
Well, yeah, if you haven't read it, I'm not all the way through it. I'm doing the reviews for it right now. I think I've read the first 13 issues, and I'm going to be putting reviews up soon. Oh, yeah, there's some backstabbing.
I mean, I only have one of the issues I bought off the stand, and I don't even remember what it was. I remember the artwork was okay, but there were parts of it that were really fun, and was it Silvermane has his head on a car?
Yes. RC car.
RC car. And it sounds like it'd be a fun thing to read, just a goofy thing. And that's what comics should be, is fun to read.
Yeah.
Wait, is that the Punisher?
Holy
Run!